Well, we're with Sharon Brown today. We're happy to have her. And Sharon, you're down in Vancouver, Washington, I believe. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, good. We love talking to people from Washington. This program is about Washington State and the climate issues and climate concerns here. So could you just briefly introduce yourself, especially as I understand it, you are a climate activist, but you also politically would self-identify as conservative. Is that right?
I self-identify as conservative in many areas. I'm still trying to figure out my political ideology. I'm a fairly new political activist, and so I'm learning and trying to be open-minded about the issues as I learn and trying to get perspectives from both sides. But in many ways, I am lean government, yes.
Okay, understood. And I got to say that approach you're talking about of being willing to listen to others' points of view and so on is a lesson that many of us could take to heart and something that seems to be sadly lacking in a lot of our political dialogue these days. I also wanted to just mention that you are an activist with Citizens Climate Lobby. Am I correct there?
Yes, that's true. I retired, until 2017, I wasn't very political. I'm ashamed to say that I didn't vote much. I didn't watch the news. I just, I was very busy with my career and I didn't pay much attention. I sort of just hoped that all the activists would get it figured out and that the folks that were in the know would take care of it and trust it. So I'm very new. And when I retired, I decided to embark on a do-it-yourself civics course. And one of the first things I did was, because of the politicalization or the polarization in our country, I kind of decided to take a very nonpartisan approach. And that's one of the things that I really loved about Citizens Climate Lobby. So I jumped in and into the pool, the deep end, and became a co-leader for the Vancouver chapter at the beginning of 2019. And it's been an interesting ride. Just this last December, I was part of the planning team for the Great Pacific Northwest Conference, and that was very successful. And we got it in under the wire for COVID at the end of February.
So one of the things that I feel like we probably should underscore here, while you are active with Citizens Climate Lobby or CCL, as we might refer to it, we're just talking. Oh, and as full disclosure, I'm also active with Citizens Climate Lobby, of course. So each of us today, however, just speaking as ourselves, and we're not speaking as representatives of Citizens Climate Lobby. So let's just jump right into what I think is a really basic question about conservative versus liberal or progressive approach to climate change and environmental things in general. How would you describe the differing approaches between, let's call it, the left of center and the right of center towards the environment and climate change?
Well, it's I have a number of friends that are very progressive. And I would say that in general, they don't have a lot of faith in capitalism and in corporations to take care of the environment or the capitalists. So they have a lot more, they feel like government is the only way that we can take care of the environment and enforce some environmental justice. And conservatives, on the other hand, don't have a lot of faith in government to redistribute and to be pro-business. So there's more concern about the economy on the conservative side, more concern about fiscal or traditionally there's been more concern about being fiscally responsible and using our tax dollars wisely. And so there's resistance to taxes.
So the one of the things that seems like you're probably pointing towards there in terms of nonpartisanship is that Citizens Climate Lobby's approach is a carbon fee and dividend approach, which we can talk about more later. And it does seem like that might be somewhere in the middle of the intersection between progressive and conservative. Would that be your take?
I agree. I think the carbon dividend approach is very elegant. Keep it simple. Solution. It's a tax that naturally, as we transition off of carbon, off of fossil fuels, it just naturally retires itself. And a lot of conservatives, including my member of Congress, are very concerned about whenever you put a tax in that it's really hard to pull it back when you're, you know, so that's something to consider. But conservatives and liberals alike, you know, including my husband, who's very much a conservative, were very concerned about the increasing price of gasoline for low-income families, including, you know, some folks in our family. So that's one of the things I love about the carbon fee and dividend solution is that the dividend is returned to families and families get to decide what to do with that. Whereas some liberal solutions, the money goes to the government, and some folks would decide how the money gets divvied up.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I do presentations to various groups about the concept of carbon fee and dividend, and it surprised me. The most pushback I get on that idea generally is from progressives, because as you say, progressives tend to want to give the money to the government and let the government decide how to spend it. I expected going in that I would get pushback from conservatives on the concept, but it didn't turn out that way. So I just want to toss in also for our listeners who may not be all that familiar with carbon fee and dividend, it's a little bit beyond the scope of this conversation today. So H.R. 763 is in the House of Representatives. And if you want to know more about the carbon fee and dividend approach, I'd suggest that you go there. We will have program notes that I'll give you a link to at the end of the program today, and I'll give you a link to that website so you can check it out and learn more about carbon fee and dividend. So you did, a good job of just a quick overview of carbon fee and dividend. Sharon, a question for you. If the given that carbon fee and dividend approach, which has got a significant market aspect to it, as a conservative, if somebody were to say to you, well, why don't we just let the free market handle this? Why do we have to have the government involved in it at all? How would you reply to that?
The problem with the free market and a completely libertarian approach is that it's very hard to get capitalists to do anything about pollution. And so when you have these negative externalities that are not being taken care of, what you have is a free market failure. And then the question is how do I... you know, what is the best way to address a free market failure? And what I love about carbon fee and dividend is that it recognizes that carbon is a pollutant and we need to do something about it. And we need to do something about it now rather than passing this cost onto our grandchildren.
You know, I love that you threw in that term negative externalities. It's one of my favorites because it's such an important concept. Basically, a negative externality, just for listeners, is some byproduct of some process that's got a cost associated with it that the producer is not bearing. So airborne pollution would be a simple example of that. And I'm going to also put a link in the program notes to talk more about the concept of negative externalities, because it is so critical to this conversation. Now, I love the way you put it, Sharon, is capitalists basically, if they can figure out a way of shifting the cost of that pollution to somebody else, there is a real temptation to do that. So it's a very important concept. So I did mention H.R. 763. It's the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. It's in the House. has been for a year or so, and it has 82 co-sponsors, and I'm happy to say, including Derek Kilmer from my district up here in Tacoma. There's only one Republican co-sponsor of that bill. That's Representative Rooney from Florida 19. And I'm just curious, what's your take on why there isn't more conservative interest in the House of Representatives in this bill?
Well, there's two general reasons that I can think of right now, and it's probably more complicated than just the two that I'm going to come up with. But one of them is that my understanding is that there was a time when we were a net exporter or importer of fossil fuels. As you're well aware, our way of life is very dependent on fossil fuels. And so there was a concerted effort to reverse that and make us less dependent. And we, through fracking, which has its, you know, its pros and cons and its problems, we've managed to reverse that. And so we reached the top of this wonderful mountain. And I think there's some folks that are like, why can't we celebrate this? Why, you know, and so there's that. There's also that the Republican platform that came out of 2016 specifically said no carbon tax. So there's quite a bit of resistance to, I think some Republicans feel like we have reached the final frontier. And I think I thought that for a while until I did some more research after I retired and became very optimistic that no, you know, we are not at the final frontier for energy. There is much more, you know, there's another frontier out there, and it's an amazingly, and it'll be amazing as we approach it.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. And that's a topic for another day, is that we tend to look at the downsides of fossil fuel pollution. And we should be paying a lot of attention to the upside of what you're referring to as a new frontier of energy that's got the potential for being pretty amazing. So one of the things that I believe I heard in your comment there is that there is a shift, or at least a potential shift, going on in conservative or Republican points of view on climate change. I happened to read an opinion piece in National Review recently where the writer of that piece was suggesting that Republicans are at risk of losing their grasp on what is probably going to be a major issue going forward, that issue being climate change. So do you have a sense that conservative opinions regarding climate change and taking some steps to address it, that those opinions are changing?
I think they are changing. And I think part of what is really pushing that change is, one, young Republicans and young Democrats. That is one thing that they are not divided on. There is consensus among young conservatives that climate change is real. And there, even amongst older folks, you know, all you have to do is watch the news, and you can see that something is very different. You know, for example, I was watching the California, what the heck, 10,000 lightning strike siege, what, you know, wildfires. I used to be able to go camping, and now it's smoke season. So there's things definitely weather-wise, climate is definitely different. And I think older folks are seeing that, even on the Republican side.
Yeah, so I found a lot of interest in that National Review column, and I'm going to put a link to that in our program notes too, especially for progressive listeners. I really think we need to be open to the idea that conservative ideas are evolving as the evidence of climate change becomes clearer. So, Sharon, how would you advise, or what do you hear people that I would describe as left of center, what mistakes do they make, or how could they do a better job in terms of talking about climate, because as activists, of course, we want to be out talking about climate. How can progressives do a better job of talking about climate to a conservative audience?
Well, as a conservative, I tend to worry about the economy. And so if you're going to talk to me about solutions for climate, and I was just listening to one of your interviews, the one that resonated with me was that economics is, you know, in order to solve this problem, we need to figure out how to make sure that we don't create a problem for people just trying to keep food on the table and jobs. 'Cause we as humans, we struggle when we're dealing with our everyday, how do I get food on the table, and trying to solve climate change. And so if you help me figure out a way that we can create jobs, that we can transition and still maintain our way of life, maybe not exactly the way we're doing it right now, but, but economy and being able to feed my family are important aspects of that. And we can't just think about, apocalypse. The apocalypse just shuts me, it's just a good way to shut things down.
Yes, I get that. And it is a trap, because if we're facing apocalypse, then why don't we just throw in the towel right now? And so I think I'm hearing you say that as a conservative, you want to maintain a healthy economy to maintain a lifestyle that people are able to enjoy their lives and not have to live in poverty.
Right.
And a part of that message is that we should be talking about the positive stuff that is out there for climate change: good jobs, clean jobs, and healthy environments with clean water. And if we like to fish or hike or enjoy the outdoors in some other way, I like to boat myself, love clean, clear water. Those are things that we can be focusing on just as easily as we can focus on the apocalypse, as you refer to it. So,
right.
Just bouncing back to Citizens Climate Lobby for a second, my belief, I don't have a data to back this up, but my belief is that the makeup in terms of left of center, right of center is about 70% left of center, maybe 30% right of center. And I'm just curious, as a conservative, how do you feel that you've been received or treated in Citizens Climate Lobby?
Citizens Climate Lobby is an amazing organization, and they work really hard to make conservatives feel welcome. I would say that within our local chapter, that 70-30 is not necessarily reflected there. It does sometimes feel like I feel like a minority, and that can be intimidating when, let's say, the passions, the energy of the progressives, when they get talking. And so it can be intimidating. But by and large, the leadership of CCL is very supportive, and it's an amazing organization to be part of. And everyone in CCL is just amazing backgrounds and a vast, wide. I learn from everyone. It's just the variety and diversity is amazing.
Yeah, I love this idea of learning, especially learning from people who I may not agree with or understand going in. I heard this woman make the statement many years ago. She was talking about listening to somebody else, and she said, "Always listen to another person with a question in your mind. What could possibly be true about what this person is saying?" And that sounds a little bit like what you're talking about, the idea that really, if you look at it, we don't learn anything if all we do is talk to people who already agree with us. What's to learn there? So,
right. So, and there's no, truth. I always find truth, you know, in everything that everybody says, you know, is that it may not be the whole truth, but if you learn about an issue, you know, and I spend a lot of my time learning about climate change. And so there's a lot of times I'll hear a statement out of people and I go, well, that is definitely true. But because these things are complicated, you know, there's lots of other things that are true also.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I think that's a key point that you're making there. So in a certain sense, from a certain 30,000 foot altitude, climate change is fairly straightforward, but there are so many different ramifications and aspects as we dig in. It does get complex. And one of the things I'm always asking people to do is to do their homework. And that's why we can start off with a simple understanding, but we really need to develop into a deeper, more granular understanding just for our own confidence and our own point of view. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about is, let's call it religious points of view regarding the climate. I grew up in what I would call a very conservative religious environment. I'm very familiar with that environment. I've got a lot of friends who live in that environment.
Oh my, that one is, for me, is I do think that biblically the earth was given to us, and we're caretakers. I think if you go back to Genesis, there was the expectation that Adam and Eve were going to be caretakers of the earth, and that it wasn't just going to be you know, that God was not going to be, the earth wasn't just in God's hands. So I think from a, that we have a responsibility to take care of the gift that we were given. And that's where I stand on that.
Yeah, I love that perspective. Regardless of point of view, I think that people who care about this earth we live on
I am. I love Catherine.
So what would you wish that liberals or progressives knew about the approach to the environment that they don't understand now? And I'm talking primarily about the political approach.
I really, you know, this may not be the answer you were thinking, but I was, for me, the thing that I would just love to see is both sides. You know, I call it the Civil War. And so when I embarked on my little political journey, I decided that I was not going to participate in the Civil War, and that my goal was to, and so I spend a lot of time with nonpartisan organizations and supporting candidates who reach across the aisle. Whenever my member of Congress or any of my representatives reach across the aisle, I try to tell them how much I really appreciate that. In our environment, I think it's important for moderates to spend the time to help their representatives, you know, and to encourage them to reach across the aisle, because that's going to be what we have to do. And that I truly believe, as a CCLer, that a bipartisan solutions are the most lasting. They are the way we're going to move forward, and that's the way to go.
Yep, I think that's eloquently put. I share what you're expressing there. I have a fantasy that climate is going to be the issue that is prominent enough and demanding enough that's going to be the issue that gets us to break this kind of deadlock that we have, this instant polarization on just about every subject. I mean, I would challenge somebody, name me a subject that we could bring up that we can't get polarized on here right away. And that just seems to be the place that we're in. And I'm hopeful that climate change and our addressing climate change will be the thing that bridges that gap.
Well, if you look into history, you'll see that before the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act were actually enacted, pollution and rivers were catching on fire regularly, and you actually had to see the air before we managed to come up with a bipartisan and what I would say is successful solution to that problem, and has been fairly lasting.
Yep. So you're pointing out that historically we've proven that we can do this. We've proven it in the past. And another one that comes to mind is the Montreal Convention on Acid Rain. We don't pay much attention to that these days, but that essentially an international agreement that went a long way to addressing the issue of acid rain. So it's not really on our radars much anymore. Well, we're close to out of time here. Anything else, Sharon, that I haven't thought of to ask you about that you'd like to throw in here?
I just wanted to add, you asked me about conservatives and what's moving them. And I will tell you that my husband, one of the things that's really been moving him on climate change and woke him up was the fact that his fishing here in, he loves to fish, and he was going fishing for salmon on the Columbia River and around here down in the Vancouver area. And the last couple of years, there has been no fishing season. And last year, there wasn't a fishing season. And this year, I think it's pretty short. So that's what really woke him up, is that salmon are going away. And from what I understand, we are all going to end up with the climate of the Northern California, and we're going to be bass fishermen very soon.
Yeah, well, that is a good point. And the larger point that I see there is that we do need to build coalitions of people. We're never going to have a solution that is exactly what one segment or the other wants. We need to pay attention to other people. And so people who love the outdoors, like your husband who love fishing, we need to build coalitions and pay attention to the interests and the goals of folks that are different from us, which is kind of what we've been talking about here today.
Yeah, John, I'm just so impressed with your radio show. I've been listening. I listened to some of the archives, and amazing work you're doing.
Well, thanks a lot. It's lots of fun, and we'll talk again sometime. And once again, thank you and take care.
Thank you.
So there we have it for today. One of my takeaways is I need to be very careful about what I assume about people going into a conversation, based on what my preconceptions are. The most important thing of all, be willing to listen to points of view different than my own. I'd love to hear from you. I read every email that I get. You can reach me at john@cctacoma.org. And I mentioned show notes. Those show notes are going to be available at cctacoma.org. Just look for Climate Talk. Click on Climate Talk, and that will take you to the show notes. Lots to study up and be aware of in this issue so important, climate change. So once again, thanks for listening and reminding you to always live like the mountain is out. Take care.